The Jewel Cirkin Show discusses the undiscussed issues that are on top of the mind of many people, from health to food security and freedom of speech matters to everything else that matters, right here on the Jewel Cirkin Show.
And a warm welcome to me, Jewel Cirkin, on my little show that there's been some big changes during the last year and a half, which have absolutely fascinated me and have confused me on more than one level. And so joining me today, I'm really, really impressed and excited to be speaking to Dr. Tanya Klemenko of the Heart Group and Alex Mitchell, who you can follow. Alex, actually, he's got a huge amount. He's got 14.1k followers on the Twitter. You can follow him on at AKE2306. Do give him a follow. And you'll find Dr. Tanya Klemenko also on Twitter on my timeline of Jules Cirkin, S-E-R-K-I-N. And Alex is a scaffolder by profession. He's a mod. And he's passionate about Northern Soul and scooters, I'll have you know. He's got some very beautiful models. I also happen to know he's a dapper dresser. And however, having taken the AstraZeneca jab in March of last year, 2021, he collapsed at his home in Scotland. And he's incredibly lucky to be alive. He's going to tell us what happened. And also in the studio, we have Dr. Tanya Klemenko, and she's a senior lecturer in biomedical sciences at the Sheffield Hallam University. She's a fellow of the Higher Education Academy and a fellow of the Institute of Biomedical Sciences. I mean, we could spend a whole show just saying what she's done and her qualifications. She's also a molecular biologist with 22 years of laboratory experience and an expert in viral pathogen detection techniques, which include RT, PCR, and metagenomics. And she's also co-authored papers on host virus interactions, the biology of RNA viruses, and B-cell malignancies. Currently, she's researching molecular mechanisms of the immune response and maintenance of immunological memory against pathogens. Now, if that's given you food for thought, listener, it's certainly me, because some of those words I don't even know. So a warm welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us. And I'd like to start with you, Alex, because you were a fit, healthy scaffolder. I know that you were going to do a Northern Soul demo at your friend's wedding. And of course, your life changed, as I said, in March 2021. So just tell the listener briefly about what happened.
I went for my vaccination, the AstraZeneca, on the 20th of March 2020. 2021, sorry. And on the 1st of April, I thought I'd pulled my calf muscles at work, doing heavy work, being a scaffolder. Mm. And by the 4th, I felt tired, but okay, ironed some clothes and turned around and collapsed. I blue lighted to hospital, spent 7.5 hours in surgery, having clots removed from my abdomen, my right leg and my left leg. Unfortunately, they were unable to save my left leg, and a week later, on the 11th of April, I had my left leg amputated. Within 2 weeks of being discharged from hospital, I was confirmed and diagnosed as a VIT. That's a vaccine-induced thrombotic thrombopenia.
And that's a word that we hadn't heard, am I right, before these vaccines? Am I right? VITT?
No one had heard it. It's actually been classified recently by the Haematologist Task Force, who spotted these some very similar situations and presentations and made a diagnosis that in every case, something unique happens with the negative antibody PF4. It becomes positive, which means your blood just wants to clot. And that is a definitive. There's a couple other markers, but that's a definitive one, the PF4 antibody. The result of which is that I'm on a regime of medication to ensure that I don't clot. At the moment, my blood has not changed in the last 5 or 6 months, and it's unlikely to change. So I'll be on that medication in some form or other for the rest of my life. And if I don't, I have about 3 weeks. The vaccine is called...
Now hold on, you have about 3 weeks
to live.
Yeah. To live. It's that tightrope that you're on then, which must be incredibly stressful for you and your family.
I try not to think about it too much, I suppose. I think obviously my family worry about it more than I do. Mm. I tend to have this attitude, well, I can't really change it. We've got something that's helping at the moment, and in the future, they may be able to come up with a workaround to turn my PF4 back. They have had success. I actually had information this morning from one of the vets who is now back to normal. He is vet clear.
Wow.
He's got it clear, and he's good to go. And I'm over the moon for him. Michael, well done. Congratulations.
That's amazing. So there is light. And I know that you've got an incredibly good team from the NHS who have supported you. And I know that your vascular surgeon was phoning colleagues around the world because she'd never actually seen anything like this, correct?
Yes. My understanding, I was the first in the world to survive with the level of blood clots that was in my system. And they'd never seen anything like this before. And it was flagged to all the health agencies, and the haematology task force at that point had already been sort of been coming together. No one spotted this, and they came across something from Norway, the Norwegian health agency that reported similar cases, 16 cases, sadly, that were all fatalities. And I believe I was the first that they gave steroids to instead of heparin, which would be the normal choice. Unfortunately, heparin is like putting petrol onto a fire for VIC cases.
Yeah, so they're learning, the doctors are learning, but too late for some, which is awful. Let's bring in Dr. Tanya Klemenko. So you've heard Alex's story, and from me as a layman, I am shocked that they carried on giving these jabs to the public who took them in good faith, who was supposed to. But tell us about these COVID vaccines, because from what I know, that people are saying that they're a new technology, and then others say that it's been, you know, years and years in research, decades, and it's not so new. So what do you think, Dr. Tanya?
First of all, I'd like to clarify that there is more than one technology employed in COVID vaccines. Here in the United Kingdom, there are two types of vaccines which were used for an absolute vast majority of population to date are either adenoviral-based vaccines, and that's the type Alex took, or lipid nanoparticles based, RNA lipid nanoparticles based vaccines. And those are Pfizer and Moderna. So perhaps for purpose of tying with what Alex just told you, us, I'm going to focus for a couple of minutes on these adenoviral based vaccines, which are AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson here, but also outside of Western Europe or Americas, in Russia, there is a Sputnik V vaccine, which is another type of adenoviral vaccine. There are several copies of these vaccines, licensed copies, for example, Covishield in India, but that's AstraZeneca. So there's three types within adenoviral vaccines, which is Sputnik V, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca. All three types are capable of inducing this condition which Alex experienced. And what you said in your, you mentioned in your question, what you are puzzled why doctors carried on doing, you know, continued with this vaccination program using these vaccines. And I think there are numerous reasons. One of them, as Alex already alluded to, the vaccine-induced thrombosis with thrombocytopenia, this, you know, his diagnosis is indeed a very new diagnosis. The clinical picture for this side effect, the presentation, was very similar to heparin-induced thrombosis. And that's, again, what Alex said, is what doctors were trying to treat it as if it was this type of disorder. And
so they were doing what they knew previously, and that didn't work for this new VITT.
Yes, so that's part of it, is what they did not quite know the molecular details of what went on, or pathophysiological details of what went wrong in someone like Alex. And it, what they've noticed is, because it's such a, and I know for you, for non-specialist audience, it might not sound as, you know, shocking, but it is such a contradictory diagnosis. You have blood clots, which are at the same time characterized by low platelets. So your blood is simultaneously clotting and very thin.
Wow.
So you have this strange physiological state. And the only similar state they knew was this platelet factor 4 positive, for antibodies for platelet factor 4 positive state, which usually occurred in people who were on blood thinning agents for way too long. And it, and that's why, so what they were doing made total sense to them. And there is another thing we need to bring into this mix to understand it. Adenoviral vectors were used in clinics since 2003. They were used as therapeutic vectors. So that's why people say these technologies are decades in use. Well, they were used as therapeutic vectors, meaning they were used on people who were already very ill or had life-threatening condition.
What kind of diseases?
Cancer, certain types of cancer.
Right.
And this drug from 2003 has been approved in by Chinese Food and Drug Administration. And interestingly enough, when a similar technology was submitted to European Drug Administration for approval, it did not result in approval, and the European medicine approving agency were concerned with mainly safety things. They were not satisfied, but they had enough evidence that it is completely safe to administer to people who have already life-threatening disease. Now, when you are talking about vaccine, you're talking about administering a drug to someone who is
healthy.
Not ill.
Exactly.
A healthy person, So this is what's so different. Adenoviral vectors, there were attempts to employ them to generate vaccines. And if you, I don't know if you know about this person called Anthony Fauci, who is an equivalent of our Chris Whitty in the United States.
Chris Whitty has gone very quiet, hasn't he, or is it me? Alex, has Chris Whitty gone extremely quiet?
I think he's retired and disappeared. It must be in the Cayman Islands or something.
Yes, after all those, you know, don't hug your grandma.
Either that or he can't trace himself and he's in a dark room shaking, because that's what he deserves to be for what he's done to people.
Exactly. I mean, I think from what I'm seeing, the anger and the confusion, because we've been told so many different things by our government, by our NHS, by our doctors. Certainly my GP said to me, we just don't know. We hear about stuff first on the BBC News. That's how in the dark she is about stuff. I mean, she was quite good to me, because she gave me an exemption form and told me not to have another one. So I was lucky, but there are people that are still being told, go ahead and have the second. And we know that sadly people have died after having the second.
After the first, the interesting thing about AstraZeneca is that, unlike RNA lipid nanoparticles vaccine, AstraZeneca is particularly dangerous on first dose. and they are talking this life-threatening conditions. There are some other side effects which might manifest after a second dose. It's really heartwarming to hear about the brave medical professionals who kind of defy the trend and listen to their patients. But I think what's important to understand is that this we did live through quite a relentless push to accept these vaccines as the only way out of pandemia. And then you see on social media, video clips, for example, of Dr. Fauci, whom I mentioned, telling people what vaccines sometimes might make you worse. And this this is old clip. And this clip is related to some of the studies which were done on adenoviral vector vaccines, which did make people more susceptible to a disease. So, you know, vaccine is supposed to protect you from a disease. Adenoviral vectors were known to make you more susceptible.
So are you saying, Dr. Tania, that these vaccines, which sometimes I don't think they're vaccines, because it seems to me that the more you get vaccinated, the weaker your immune system is becoming. Are you saying that that's a case, that your immune system could be weakened from these vaccines?
I don't have good data. You know, I don't have any publications in my extensive folder to strongly suggest it for adenoviral vector vaccines. The mechanism for susceptibility was different. Those were vaccines against HIV virus, and young men who were inoculated 18 months later were more likely to contract the virus than the control group. And Dr. Anthony Fauci is a lead author on that paper. And that's a, you know, that clip where he says what vaccine might make you worse, it relates to that.
HIV.
Yes. But because there was this large body of literature clearly demonstrating what some adenoviral vaccines, at least some of them, can make you more susceptible to disease. And there were some mechanisms which we uncovered. And one of the mechanisms was what our body encounter adenoviruses all the time. You might have heard about this atypical hepatitis in children now, which occupy quite a lot of media.
Yes, I'm seeing this. It's absolutely horrifying.
One of the suspects is adenovirus. So we do encounter them a lot in our life. And the idea was, in those HIV vaccines, we used an adenovirus, which our body is too familiar with. Let's use something else. Let's use chimpanzee adenovirus, which our body will not be familiar with. And this is the basis for AstraZeneca vaccine. Unfortunately.
Was that a huge risk to put chimpanzee adenovirus into our vaccines, the AstraZeneca at least?
It looks like it was not a good bet. Obviously, we know now from ONS data what people who've taken AstraZeneca vaccine several months later were more susceptible to contracting SARS-CoV-2. Than unvaccinated. So this negative efficacy was still there. But unfortunately, this particular adenoviral vector had some additional traits not present in other adenoviral vectors, which made it particularly dangerous in terms of this life-threatening side effects.
Let's come back to Alex, because Alex, when you had your, I prefer to call them jabs, to be honest, at the moment. But when you had your appointment for your AstraZeneca, were you given anything to read or sign or any warning or any discussion before you had it? And I know that they did it in your right arm rather than left. I had mine in my left. But were you given anything like that?
I was verbally told that I may have a sore site area for a couple of hours, and I may experience cold or flu-like symptoms for 48 hours. That was it. No paper, no leaflet, verbal warning. I don't, I don't remember signing anything.
No. And were you ever given your batch number? Because I know in Scotland, some people found it very hard to find their batch numbers.
It was very difficult to get my batch number. I eventually got it through the haematology department, who confirmed it for me. And it is on my paperwork and it's on my medical notes now.
Because in the UK, we were given a little blue card, which I carry. You've seen it on my Twitter. It's very, very battered. And people actually comment and say, what the hell have you done with your card? But I use it a lot and it's been dragged about. But again, I wasn't given any discussion. And they gave me a piece of paper afterwards, a formal piece with the ingredients. And I said to my husband, chimpanzee. Had I known it had that, I would have thought twice about having that. And if we go back to March when we had these, the coercion and the propaganda on the television and everywhere, we'd been locked in. And I remember when I went to have my appointment, I'd been locked in at home for ages, as we all had. We'd been locked down. We were being moved off benches. We were told we could only go out for an hour's exercise. It was something, well, a very well-used word now, unprecedented. But I was actually pleased to get my AstraZeneca. Of course, now I know better. But let's come back to Dr. Tania. So in your opinion, how safe are these viruses? So, you know, are they stopping COVID?
We are talking about adenoviral vector-based vaccines now, right? They clearly confer immunity, which is not long-lasting, but they clearly confer immunity against contracting SARS-CoV-2. There is also data to show what they have a positive effect on, so they reduce COVID-related death in vaccinated cohort. And there is also a very interesting paper which came out recently, which shows what these vaccines are better than the RNA-based vaccines in terms of overall mortality, because vaccines might have unintended consequences. And only looking at overall mortality, you can judge whether they are, you know, reducing morbidity and mortality in population.
So, Dr. Tan, you're saying that the AstraZeneca, the adenovirus vaccine, may be better than the mRNA vaccines in holding COVID at bay. Am I right?
No, it's not exactly what that paper shows. So that's a very recent paper by a Danish research group led by Christina Stabel-Ben. She's on Twitter, and I suggest people follow her. She is a fantastic scientist, and she's also against the wind. Like, she's not shy at these controversies. She's been talking about issues with how we assess vaccine efficacy, how we assess vaccine safety. She's been studying and talking about it for 20 years now. So anyway, her paper suggests that even so, the data we have clearly shows reduction of COVID mortality in both adenoviral and mRNA type of vaccines. But when you take into account overall mortality, because, you know, you might be cured of COVID or you might have less chances of dying of COVID, but you, because of the vaccine, you might die of something else. And so this overall mortality for mRNA vaccines looks particularly worrying. It looks like they actually increase your chance of dying compared to unvaccinated. And AstraZeneca seems to have decreased your overall chance of dying. And here then different, you know, factors come into play. Okay, we know what these vaccines stop you for some time, for some weeks from contracting the virus. We know what they have an impact on COVID-related mortality. We know what they have impact at reducing severity of a disease. But we also know they cause side effect. So this ratio of these known positives and known negatives.
Risks.
Yes. Mm. Yes. And you also need to take into account age, because we know what COVID is, such a disease which has a very clear age profile.
So around 82 years, is it? That's what I read.
This is the average age of death, and it's been quite stable through entire last 2 years. But you probably know what with a recent analysis which was published in Financial Times and based on Office for National Statistics data, so completely mainstream analysis, shows what for someone who is, I'm 45, so for someone almost up to my age, COVID is same or less dangerous as flu. For someone age of my elder son, which is 20, COVID is actually 10 times less dangerous than a flu. For children, COVID is 6 to 10 times less dangerous. Obviously, as you get older, COVID becomes a more significant, you know, issue. And,
but isn't that the same for any disease? Once you're in your 80s, you know, you die of pneumonia or, you know, heart attack or a stroke as you get older. This is kind of a normal thing. Am I right?
You are right. Although there are some diseases which, you know, I even called childhood diseases, which are more dangerous for young children, and flu is actually a fine example. For children under age of 5, flu is a more dangerous disease than several others, and you know that's why vaccination against flu for young children is derived from this, you know, vein benefit and risks ratio.
But again, this is a new thing because my kids are all grown up. They're all in their 20s and 30s, and they didn't ever have a flu vaccine that I'm aware of growing up. So this is a new thing, adding the flu virus, or the flu vaccine for children, I believe, fairly recent.
You are right. The recommended age for flu vaccination has been steadily expanding. And even in these last 2 years, as you know, primary school age children were offered flu vaccination at school, but then secondary school children, they didn't used to have it. Now, these last 2 years, secondary school age children are also offered flu vaccination. So if you look at the chart, which, you know, plot time against groups of people who are offered flu vaccination, you will see what it's ever expanding group of people who medical doctors believe might benefit from this vaccine.
And Alex, do come in if you've got any questions. But what I was going to ask was, why the side effects? You know, I'm talking to people and they go, oh, I've had three, I've had my booster and I'm fine. And I want to hit them actually, you know, because it's that I'm fine, you know, I'm okay. But the side effects are very, very different. But the people that I'm speaking to pretty much daily, I met somebody just yesterday on my radio show whose husband, perfectly fit, had a heart attack 2 days after having his AstraZeneca. 2 weeks after having his AstraZeneca, and he's now on life drugs for life. And I'm going to phone her with some information and just ask, did she report it? Because so many people don't report it. I also have a colleague who went deaf after his AstraZeneca, the second one, and they said it was nerve damage to the brain. Did he report it? No, he didn't. So a lot of people don't even know how to report it. I note now that on the card, they're actually putting the yellow card details, which we never had back in the day. My doctors didn't report it. Alex, I think your doctors did report it, but yours was pretty major, Alex Mitchell.
Yes, the vascular surgeon actually told me himself that he reported it because obviously they had never seen this and it had to be flagged up.
He must have been absolutely horrified when he saw it and actually not knowing how to save you.
The words that they gave me when I came round from the 7.5 hours from the vascular surgeon that operated on me was, I don't know why you're here. I don't know how you're here. We hear you, Anne. We hope you stay. And she still, you know, I speak to other vascular surgeons because my case is quite unique. And they've all used the same word. And it's not a word that I hear doctors and professors say very often, miracle. Every one of them says she performed some kind of miracle in there. Which I'm so grateful for, and I'm sure my family are most of the time.
You have a huge long haul to get back to fitness and health. You're having to have physio weekly. I've seen your physio. It's absolutely brutal. I know you're in a lot of pain. This is hard work now.
It's the hardest thing I've ever done. I've had to accept that the body that I had, that, you know, 57, and I'm not being arrogant when I say I was in phenomenal physical shape.
Yeah, I've seen photos of you. As I said, a very dapper dresser.
Thank you.
So let's go back to Dr. Tania. So why are these side effects so different? Because I am speaking to people who tweet me, and when I'm, you know, I'm always documenting my side effects, and they say, my goodness, I've got exactly the same, you know, so the numb face or the pain in the temples or the Bell's palsy or whatever. Why are these side effects different in different people? Do we know? And are we seeing an autoimmune reaction?
The consensus in the literature is that majority of side effects seen from vaccination are because of the abnormal immune response. It's not necessarily autoimmunity. So, for example, in case of VITT, Alex's diagnosis, it is definitely an example of autoimmunity because body, in this case, generates antibodies against one of the proteins which is normally present in your body. And this is this platelate factor 4. And it's important for normal blood clotting. And that's why when your immune system attacks your blood clotting system, this is where things go so horribly wrong. So this is an example of clear autoimmune reaction. But there might be some other mechanisms. For example, if you've mentioned inflamed nerves, you've mentioned some neurological symptoms, which in many cases, they have a different mechanism underlying it, and it is more inflammatory response, which may not have any autoimmune component to it, but because of immune response against this foreign agent, the reaction, body reaction goes in overdrive, and it promotes inflammation, promotes damage to tissue through release of various stress molecules. And then the unfortunate, we are made to fight these infections. We are made to fight them. We cannot just turn off.
So our immune system kicks into action.
Yes, and for some people, so in, perhaps in response to part of your question where you asked why different people have such a, you know, variety, different, an array of symptoms, and different people have different parts of it, is there will be some individual differences, including in your genetic makeup. If you look, I'm afraid the COVID literature is quite, unfortunately, it's quite biased, but if you look at earlier literature, pre-COVID era, you would see various interesting observations about people who have small changes in their genetic makeup, which makes them more susceptible to, their bodies becomes more susceptible to throwing a tantrum upon administering
a huge immune response. Yes. Well, let's go back to batches, because I know from the data that I've been collecting just on my Twitter that my batch, PV46671 AstraZeneca, taken in March, has injured a lot of people. I mean, I'd need to go through the numbers. I can't just pluck them out, but I found over 17 just on Twitter, and not all of us are on Twitter, let's face it. And also sadly, 2 deaths from that batch. So is that a batch problem, do you think? I know it's a tough question.
My impression is that there is clear pattern with batches, and that's something that because if people who don't know about one another did not know they exist, and then they find one another through observing similar changes happening to their bodies, and then they search for the batch number. It's very difficult to corroborate from official sources, and whatever I say now is very easy to critique and very easy to dismiss, because all this website, How Bad Is My Batch, for example, where you can enter your batch number and see how many people, or, you know, in what geographical position those affected people are. And it does seem like there is clustering. So it would suggest that several boxes with that batch went into that particular country or into that particular part of the country and were administered. And there is this spatial and temporal association which suggests that there is something in common among these cases. And batch number looks like a very plausible suspect.
I noticed that these batches were sent all across the country. So my husband had his the next day, same place, different batch number. And the people that I found that are injured from PV46671 are in Scotland, Wales, the Channel Islands. So I haven't been able to manage, and I need to ask Freedom of Information, how many were in a batch? I don't know whether Alex has ever asked that yet.
I did get the question. I did ask the question, and I do know the answer, but it eludes me at the moment. I want to say there is 8 vials in a eight doses in a vial.
Okay.
Because there's a little left over.
So it doesn't sound like a huge amount.
If I may come in,
yeah.
I think what Alex is describing is doses within one vial, but then there will be, what you're asking, Julie, is how many vials are in a batch? I don't have an answer, not on top of my head, and I don't know if it's publicly available.
Well, let's put it on our list to find out, because I do think that's a very important thing, and I know that one of my members in my support group has, as we all have, contacted AstraZeneca, and we haven't got very far. And my GP wrote to AstraZeneca and filled in their form, and they didn't get any support at all. So I think that would be a great starting point to find out how many were in this batch. And we also know, I'm pretty sure that I've read, and how true it is, I don't know, that there were saline batches sent out by mistake.
There were several, leaks of information which might suggest that there were differences in manufacturing process, there were differences in storage conditions. There were emails, not related to AstraZeneca, but in public domain, there are authenticated emails in relation to Pfizer vaccine, where it's internal emails which clearly indicate that upon inspection of quality, we noticed that different batches had different degrees of degradation of RNA enclosed in those lipid nanoparticles. We know there is a whistleblower on Pfizer case, right, who is talking about lots of irregularities related to the clinical trial of this vaccine. And we know that there are some documented cases of foul play in relation to AstraZeneca.
Foul play,
okay. In relation to AstraZeneca vaccine approval and, quality controls. And these people are trying to speak up, they try to reach out, they want to be heard. But as you said, and as Alex said, they haven't gotten far.
As I said before, you can follow Alex Mitchell on the Twitter, if you're on Twitter, at AKE2306. And what I've noticed, and I'm sure Dr. Tanya's noticed, that the your fighting spirit comes through, because I know that I've gone through many different emotions over the last year and was quite gung-ho and positive. And then, you know, you get times when you're a bit down. And I have admired, and I know so many others have admired, your fighting spirit, Alex, and your humour, and the way that not only are you telling your story beautifully, but you're supporting others as well who are so damaged and in the same boat. And I know that my physician that I saw in London privately, because luckily I've got private insurance, if not, I'd still be waiting for an MRI. And like you said, nothing shows up on the MRI because these microclots are very small. But my physician basically told me there is no point going to my local hospital, which is where my GP sends me every time I get an attack, a vax attack. And he is advocating, you know, the London teaching hospitals, the big hospitals that are seeing more of this, and possibly where the, it sounds rude to say, but maybe where the more, maybe more experienced surgeons are and the consultants. So how are you coping? Tell us in a nutshell how you keep so positive, because I've admired your spirit.
I go through the same emotions as everybody else, you know. I have my good days, my bad days. I get my down times, you know, because it is hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. But I think for me, it's the fact that I've always thought, there's nothing wrong with visiting those places and feeling like that, because entitled to is when you stay in them, it's not healthy. And that doesn't quite work for me. I've always been positive. The fighting spirit, that's just always been me, just believing I should stand up for what I think is right. And I think this has just took it to a level where, for me, and I know it may sound corny, and it's not, it's literally life or death now. You know, this is my life.
Well, as you were saying, it could, in 3 weeks, if it went wrong and it wasn't managed properly, or you took, I remember telling you to take some supplements, for example, and you said, no, I can't, you know, absolutely not. So this is where we have to be really careful on Twitter, because sadly, a lot of the vaccine damage are having to help each other on Twitter and saying, I've tried the niacin flush, or I've tried this, or I take, you know, copious amounts of vitamin C. It's actually dangerous for some people, and we need to be aware when we're giving this information.
You'll find that I don't give that. I say, go and speak to a doctor. They'll maybe ask me, what blood should I ask to be tested for? And I can only tell them, if someone is coming to me sort of a 7 month after I've had any of their vaccines and they think they're having blood clots, it's unlikely, because if it was going to happen, it would have happened long before then, shall we say.
We've got Sir Christopher Chope, who's speaking up for the vaccine damaged. And he's in Parliament tomorrow, I believe.
He is. He's got his second reading of the bill. My understanding is that he has a lot more support behind the scenes. I think he has something like 19 plus MPs supporting his bill. He's a very brave, courageous man, because he's took on his own government. He's took on his own party.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't tell you something about what's going on, that a man's prepared to stand up against everything that he's part of and say, this is wrong. Now, I quoted 920 people that claimed the vaccine damage payment scheme. That was on the 28th of February. It's now 1,200. It's been up 300 people.
Still waiting.
Yeah, plus the other 800 that had been from the previous 10 years. Mm. So that's 2,000 people. The government has not helped or supported in one bit.
No.
And that's my anger for people, because if I'm in this position, everyone else is.
Yeah, and you've lost your leg and your livelihood and your career. So, you know, you're still waiting for help. Dr. Tanya.
what you mentioned about Twitter, or, you know, people reaching out
on Facebook
behind anonymous profiles often, this is actually a symptom which of something that breaks my heart, to be honest. I think COVID vaccine injured are in particularly bad position, because these are for many reasons, this vaccination program turned out to be the most divisive vaccination program in definitely in my lifetime. And they are attacked often from both sides. They are attacked from people who are vaccine believers and who don't want to see any shadow in this treatment and preventative treatment, and they are then labeled anti-vaxxers or they called names. And on another hand, they're often attacked by people who are now bragging, oh, I knew better. Why didn't you? Can't you read? You know, why didn't you look it up before? And I think that this is a particularly vulnerable group. Many of them also don't have formal diagnosis.
Yeah.
Many of them are confident they are vaccine damaged. They know their body. They know how it happened. They now talked to people with similar symptoms. They are convinced this is what caused it. But they don't have any, you know, piece of paper to prove it. And they have very hard time getting recognized. So I think this is, and the fact that it's been raised in Parliament really is heartwarming.
I think it's incredible. And I watched the first one where Sir Christopher Chope made his announcements. And I was shocked to see so many MPs slither out of the Parliament. I was angered and shocked that they didn't bother to stay behind and listen. And that's how blinkered it's been. Dr. Tania, do you think it's likely that we'll ever know the accurate numbers of the vaccine injured?
I think it's highly unlikely for several reasons. Reason number one, the most important one, I believe, is what we do not, we only have a passive system of report. So only someone who is convinced it's the vaccine, only someone who is also IT literate enough, or someone who feels still well enough to go and research it, only those people will try to push for their incident to be reported. So I think this is very important to realize that this passive system is bound to miss huge number of cases. And the estimates vary, you know, we miss between 50 and 90%. Of cases, depends on whose estimate you look at. And then a second reason, a very important reason, is that vaccines are in a way these, you know, sacred cows. You cannot question them, you cannot critique vaccines. And I've mentioned Christine Stabel-Benn earlier, researcher Danish. From Denmark.
Yeah.
Yes, from Denmark. And what I've been to a couple of conferences where I was lucky to hear her, and she always says that a lot of what I do is solid science, but it's so risky to let it into big public domain. She's never invited to talk to CNN or, you know, large networks or whatever equivalent of BBC they have there in Denmark, and it's because there is this fear from public health professionals, regulatory agencies, but once you start opening this Pandora box and once you start talking about it, you'll have to do something about it. Mm-hmm. So it's also in a way, it's kind of, I'm not blaming medical doctors for doing it. I think it's part of their training to kind of block anything what might be a signal of
uncomfortable. It could be uncomfortable, yes. Couldn't it?
Yes.
I mean, do you think they're not trained? I know certainly my GPs, when I was so bad after the 48 our flu that I embraced because I was told that that was a great sign. You know, my immune system was, you know, welcoming this AstraZeneca. But my GP, I had four phone consultations before I was finally seen. And I was extremely lucky because my retired GP, who was old school, came back from retirement to help out. And she said on the phone, she phoned me and she said, I need to see you. And she did a D-dimer and sent me straight to A&E. But had it not been for her, I may not well be here. But the first GP I spoke to said to me, oh, well, if it's after 48 hours, it won't be the vaccine. And there's this whole, you know, their training, they had no idea, did they? Alex?
The doctors have no idea. They really don't. I think you alluded to earlier, I am so, so lucky that the medical team are behind me, and as are all the other classified vets, I have to say that they medically proven that what's happened. It's the people that can't prove it, that they're fighting a bigger fight that I don't understand, and that my heart breaks for them. They're fighting just to be recognised that they're ill.
And you I think there's this awful confusion now of I know for myself that even when I was vaccine damaged and I knew I was vaccine damaged, I still at the time was asking about having my second jab because the fear of COVID, which I've now had, so I don't have that as much now, but the fear of COVID is still there. So you're sort of damned if you don't have the jab and you're damned if you do. And I know young people, as a young a journalist that works with us, and he's been in hospital, young South African guy, been in hospital in London on a breathing, being helped to breathe with COVID. Others don't even know they've got it. So it's a very, very strange disease. Before we finish off, I just wanted to ask Dr. Tanya, what are the Chinese, do you know much about the Chinese vaccination? What are they using?
Yes, I happen to know quite a bit about it.
So here's another show.
Okay. Yeah. No, for a peculiar reason. I you can hear I am no native speaker. I am Ukrainian by
Really?
Origin. Yes. Thank you. So I am Ukrainian by origin. And my family, my entire family, used to live in Ukraine because most of, quite a lot of my family is now refugees abroad, but my family used to live in Ukraine. My parents, most importantly, are in Ukraine. So when the vaccination against COVID was rolling out, I was indeed reading every piece of information I could because I have, 74 years old dad and 70 years old mom, and they're definitely in this COVID risk group.
Yeah.
And then first vaccine, which was made available in Ukraine, was a Chinese vaccine, Sinopharma vaccine. Sinopharma is a Chinese company, and vaccine is called CoronaVac. And this vaccine made using classical technology is the same technology employed in flu vaccine making. So it's a live virus which was grown on cultured cells. And then these virus particles were harvested and inactivated. And so this killed virus is then injected. And I told my parents, go and get it. First, it's old school technology, which has been trialed for decades and we know safety profile. Mm. And second, it's an entire virus particle. So you have all 29 different proteins in there, 130 something epitopes. Whereas these genetic vaccines, but AstraZeneca or Pfizer or Moderna, they confer extremely narrow immunity to only one of the possible proteins in that virus. So
they took that
vaccine. Yeah, they took it. Yes. So this Chinese vaccine, which has also been very popular in middle and low income countries, because it's also a lot cheaper than these novel genetic wonders. It's been very popular in Latin America, and it doesn't confer absolute protection as well, but that's the nature of coronaviruses, but it does have better safety profile. And it seems to generate a much wider immunity just because of it's what's in it, in that vaccine, what's inside.
Right. Well, that's we've sadly run out of time, but that has now brought me onto another show, because from what I'm seeing, you know, in China, they've got these huge, huge lockdowns and they're possibly very vaccinated. So can you tell me in 1 minute why?
In 1 minute, what I can say is that they seem to still be pursuing zero COVID agenda.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no vaccine can completely block the spread of coronavirus. And I think for whatever reasons, we're still pursuing zero COVID agenda, which most other countries have abandoned long ago.
Okay. So first of all, we're sending all our best wishes to your family and the people of Ukraine. And I hope that, that the situation there gets much calmer and that we can help some of our fellow friends from Ukraine to be safe. Alex, would you like to just round up?
Yes, thank you very much for inviting me on and talking to me today.
I've learned a lot today, I can assure you.
So have I.
It's a whole other show, Alex.
I did too.
It's a whole other show.
Oh, Tanya's just opened my mind to some things that I didn't quite get. Now I'm a bit clearer, so thank you. I really enjoyed it. We need to do another one.
Well, I have noticed that you're on the ball, Alex, with the things. I'm a typical Gemini, so I rush things. And I take lots of things to try and get better, and I do lots of things. You've seen me with my green smoothies and my organic this and that. But I'm not very analytical, and I'm fascinated by medicine, but I can't take it all in sometimes. And, you know, let's face it, we're all having to learn new words, starting with unprecedented VIT. Dr. Tanya Klimenko has given us some more today. So RT-PCR and metagenomics, just to start off. You've been listening to me, Jules Serkin. Please follow Dr. Tanya Klimenko. You will find her Care of the Heart group, that's HARTgroup.org. And you can follow her on the Twitter, which is where I spend my life, at TAKA_TUT, Tucker_Tut. Please follow her. You will find out so much. And of course, the lovely Alex, who's inspiring us all, Alex Mitchell, find him on Twitter, follow him, AKET2306. He's got 14.1K followers. And he must be doing something right. So from me, Jules Serkin, thanks for listening, and we'll be speaking to you very soon again. Goodbye.